Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Well, Independence Day weekend is upon us, an ideal time to reflect for a few minutes about what it means to be an American, the genius of a nation that's unified by a commitment to an idea rather than merely a common race, religion, or ethnic heritage, and how we still have a lot of work to do to preserve our country's status as a beacon of hope and prosperity. We begin with a chat I had earlier this week with Moises Serrano. Moises came with his undocumented parents to the U.S. as an infant and has somehow managed to survive and thrive despite the challenges of growing up as both gay and a DACA program participant in rural North Carolina. In our talk, Moises shared his thoughts on the recent Supreme Court ruling preserving the DACA program and what he hopes can happen next to improve U.S. immigration policy. Well, Moises Serrano, welcome back to News and Views. It's sure good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, some extraordinary times in America, and indeed with the United States Supreme Court issuing a pair of rulings that I know you were paying very close attention to in the recent days. You're a DACA recipient. You're a longtime advocate for the rights of immigrants in our country. Talk to me about your initial reaction to the decision in the case saying that, at least for now, Trump's efforts to get rid of the DACA program were not going to take place.
No, thank you so much, Rob. Of course, you know, as an immigrant rights advocate, a DACA recipient, and an LGBTQ person, this has been a whirlwind. The past 2 weeks have been completely unexpected in a year that we thought was going to be filled with bad news. So it turns out the Supreme Court says I can't be fired for being gay, and the Trump administration can't take my work permit away, so I'm able to keep my job. America doesn't know what's coming to it just yet. You know, I can't, I'm fully protected by the law so far, right? And that has given approximately 800,000 undocumented people who have applied for DACA a great amount of relief and hope for the future.
And while all those emotions are flowing through you, it's not a permanent fix, and you must still hold some real anxiety about what the future holds.
Absolutely, right. The Trump administration, since it came to power, and while he was campaigning, right, he campaigned on a platform of xenophobia, specifically targeting DACA recipients and their families. And so in 2016, when he won the election, we knew that this day was coming, right? We knew that he would rescind DACA, and we knew that it would end up at the Supreme Court. And almost four years later now, here we are, right? And so, again, this isn't a permanent fix. The only body of government that can provide a pathway towards citizenship is Congress. And Congress has not passed any type of immigration reform since 1986, which means that millions of people have now lived for decades in legal limbo with no way out.
Talk to us, if you wouldn't mind, for a moment about a little bit about your story. You came to the United States, if I'm right, as an infant 30 years ago from Peru, if I'm not mistaken. And America is the only home you've ever really known, right?
Exactly. My parents were farm workers. I migrated with my mother and my two sisters in 1991. My father was already here working in the fields. We happened to have settled in Yadkin County, North Carolina, because at that time, tobacco was still a huge part of our state's economy. And, mm-hmm. and so both of my parents picked tobacco. And I vividly remember, you know, my parents transitioning jobs and even helping them out, you know, when I was little at chicken houses or strawberry fields, right? And so Yadkin County, North Carolina is all I have ever known. I did migrate from Mexico here in 1991, and it is 2020 now. I am 30 years old. I'm still undocumented. I don't have a pathway towards citizenship. And as you were saying, we're getting ready to have lived in North Carolina for 3 decades now with no solution in sight.
I know in a story that Melissa Boughton wrote for NC Policy Watch, you also talked about the reality of what your life has been like, even as someone who has been an American essentially for their entire life, trying to earn a living, just the basics of going to work and the fear that sort of is omnipresent for people in your position of, gosh, is a cop going to pull me over because I've got a broken taillight and what's going to happen next? That's still been a reality of your life for years and years, right?
Exactly. You know, North Carolina before 2007 and specifically before 2006, North Carolina was one of the states that actually did issue driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants in our state. They had to present an ITIN number, which is individual tax identification number, and some type of ID. And we were able to obtain driver's licenses. Unfortunately, with the passage of the Real ID Act and the ratification of that nationwide, more stringent security measures were placed on driving privileges, such as presenting a social security card if you wanted to obtain or renew your license. And that's something that I obviously didn't have when I was able to obtain my learner's permit, and I was just never able to renew it. For 6-7 years, I drove without a license, right? Mm. And exactly, that fear is still predominant in our community because so many are not DACA recipients, right? Unfortunately, under the Obama administration, we actually saw a constant fear of deportation because the Obama administration pioneered 287G programs and secure community programs, which both programs were just local partnerships with immigration and customs enforcement officials. That meant it gave the power to local police to investigate the immigration status of individuals who could be stopped for something as innocuous and as a broken taillight.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the interesting ironies of the Trump administration, that Trump came to power with such an anti-immigrant stance. And yet it's true that the Obama administration really set records for deporting people from the United States, notwithstanding the reputation it had as a, you know, warm and caring and loving administration. And in many respects, with respect to immigrants, that just wasn't the case.
And that's a very important thing to remember, that unfortunately, both parties have something in common, and that has been their efforts to scapegoat the immigrant community and to pursue the undocumented immigrant community. As you were saying, the Obama administration really perfected this well-oiled deportation machine that just handed it over to this administration, right, that just went to town on enforcing policies such as the zero tolerance policy, as we saw, caging children at the border, separating them from their parents. This has been a very difficult 12 years of my life.
Well, and as you alluded to in your initial comments, it's not just your status as a DACA recipient that's been a source of stress and challenges for you in your life in America. It's the reality of being someone who is affected by this Supreme Court decision last week that also was a favorable decision, striking down the idea that someone could actually be fired from their job because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. Talk to us about that. You were profiled in an award-winning film entitled Forbidden, Undocumented and Queer in Rural America. So talk to us about your reaction to the Bostock decision and about the film and how maybe people could check it out.
Of course. You know, undocumented immigrants are not like anybody, right? No one is a one-dimensional person. And I think specifically it's really important to highlight that undocumented immigrants, much like the rest of America, sit at intersections of identities, right? And they have layered and multiple identities. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not just an undocumented immigrant. I happen to be an LGBTQ person as well, right? And a Southerner at that.
Right. And many other things, no doubt, as well.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, unfortunately, in my experience, I saw that I had a forbidden identity, right, if you will, and that I didn't fit in anywhere, right? Homophobia is unfortunately something that both of my cultures, both the American and the Mexican community, have in common. And that's something that permeates American and Mexican society and also the rest of the world. But it also just means that I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. I didn't feel like I had a place anywhere, facing homophobia at school, at church, even at home, but also then facing xenophobia at school. It was a very difficult reality and a very difficult issue for me to understand at such a young age that I could both be persecuted for being gay and be persecuted for being undocumented, while also tying in national identity. I think we have to be very honest about who this issue is affecting. It's affecting Mexican people. You know, Donald Trump has specifically attacked Mexicans. And so there's an additional layer of the racializing of one's national heritage. And that's a whole nother issue I feel that has been spearheaded by this administration. However, again, it's something deconstructing homophobia, you know, internalized homophobia has been a lifelong effort and a lifelong journey. And I think in order to do that, I also wanted to open up my life to other people so they could understand my journey and the struggles and the obstacles that the immigrant community face. And that is how this project, Forbidden, Undocumented, and Queer in Rural America, came to be. I happened to have met Tiffany Reinert, the director, just very serendipitously at another interview that I was doing. I was having my story filmed for a Wake Forest segment called the Where Are You From Symposium. And it just so happened Tiffany Reinert was visiting her friend Kathy Barnhill, who was videotaping me. And Tiffany said something that I like to repeat, and she was just so stunned by how little she knew about the undocumented immigrant community and how she had taken the privilege of citizenship for granted. You know, she had never thought about what it's like for people who do not have citizenship. And so from there, they followed me around in my immigrant activist journey from about 2012 to 2014, as I traveled across the state sharing my story and also trying to advocate for immigration reform. And that's what the film is. It talks about what it's like to not only be undocumented and queer in rural spaces in America. And that story is oftentimes completely erased from national dialogue.
The film is Forbidden, Undocumented and Queer in Rural America. You can find it at ForbiddenDoc.com, ForbiddenDoc.com. We're coming to the end of our time with Moises Serrano, but I want to ask you, I guess as a final question, how you doing? How are you feeling going forward? Are you feeling any sense of optimism? How is your life these days in rural North Carolina? Are you seeing progress? Are you seeing hopeful developments in this journey?
Rob, that's a very great question. You know, I think I'm cautiously optimistic. However, I am also very grounded in the reality of knowing that this November will dictate the rest of my life. If this administration, if Donald Trump is reelected as president of the United States of America, I see no point for me to stay in the country anymore. I believe I will be forced to leave this country. I have already lived, as I mentioned to you, 3 decades in legal limbo. I can't see myself living for another 4 years in this constant fear and this constant terror of having my family ripped away from me, of having millions of people deported. I would see no use in staying here. So for me, I am cautiously optimistic. I feel like the tides are turning. The SCOTUS decision, the DACA decision ignited a little bit of hope inside of me that maybe just perhaps the rule of law will win, and that we are able to change this administration come November. But as I mentioned to you, this will be the most important election I feel in my lifetime.
We wish you all the best. Thank you for your amazing activism. We can only say that we hope that you'll be with us as an American for many decades to come. And this is just one of many conversations we'll have a chance to have on News and Views.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Coming up next, another moving story from a young immigrant pursuing the American dream in North Carolina. Don't go away.